post-apocalyptic skills. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: news and events, the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and off the shelf. Support for this podcast comes in the form of contributions via Ko-fi. You can become a member or make a one-time donation. And each quarter, I have prizes for randomly selected contributors. In today's episode, I am starting off by announcing quarter three prize winners. The first prize is for two books from my own collection, as well as a beautiful botanically dyed sock blank from Ninja Chickens. And that goes out to Madeline. The next prize is a pair of custom-made socks from Woolen Waves. And that prize goes out to Patricia. And an unannounced prize that I collected on my recent travels to the Hudson Valley is a skein of Upland Fiber Company Core in the worsted weight, which is a beautiful deep blue. And this has been provided from Michael of Upland Fiber Company, a new up-and-coming fiber company that I've been talking about and knitting with. And I will throw in with that skein the leftovers of my fingering weight yarn in pewter, because I have completed the project that I was working on. And that will give Naz, the winner, an opportunity to try out and knit with both of those weights. So you can contact me if you hear your name through Ravelry or through Instagram. Whatever way you know to contact me, you can let me know you're a winner. If I don't hear from winners in the next week or so, I will be reaching out to you with your email information and letting you know you're a prize winner. Congratulations to our winners, and thank you everyone so much for making your contributions to the podcast. The quarter four prize will be a Rhinebeck prize pack. I will be collecting goodies on my trip to Rhinebeck and assembling them and talking about what all I gathered when I return from my trip. In order to be considered in the drawing for the quarter four prize, you can make a one-time contribution on Ko-fi, or you can become a contributing member. Thank you. Thank you. For the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival. And my health was strong and allowed me to do that, which was very exciting. So on Friday, I drove up to a beautiful Hudson Valley farm called Teashoke Farm for a pre-festival event hosted by the Hudson Valley Textile Project. I was thrilled to see my friends Carol and Gail and Mary Jean at this event, to have some beautiful local treats and beverages from a local winemaker, and to take part in a trunk show and class on color and using color in knitting that was instructed by Tammy Gore. This was the first time I met Tammy and became familiar with her patterns. She's an incredibly generous teacher, and she is a very adventurous knitter. She claims to be addicted to knitting, and that is certainly supported by the number of designs she's worked on in quite a short time. She brought a beautiful trunk show, a display of completed knitted garments and accessories of hers, all with a lot of attention to not just design, but also use of color. And she brought out one after another of these, often two designs knit in radically different color choices, while we worked on playing with color, kind of breaking out of a color rut, and working to think about color a little bit differently. She had a number of exercises for us, and she also spent individual time with each participant. I got to sit next to Carol during all of this. Actually, I sat myself next to Carol during all of this and had a really lovely afternoon. It was one of the most, you know, absolutely beautiful, like picture-perfect days on a farm with lots of pumpkins and produce and beautiful blue sky and warm weather. I could hear killdeer calling through the window, and the farm had just a beautiful event space that we occupied. One of the patterns of Tammy Gore that struck me quite a bit was something called rosewood, and that has landed in my queue. It's could be knit, you know, any way you want. Of course, it's a shawl pattern, an asymmetrical shawl pattern with some really cute pom-poms along the border. It's designed to be knit in DK weight, and it's for three colors. And the sample that she had really attracted me because there was not a great deal of color contrast between the three colors, and they melded so beautifully into the design, which I really enjoyed. For my own part, I brought with me the chart for the Woolen Affair hand-knitted wristband and thought that I would play around with some color concepts and some of my leftover jumper weight yarn, which I have many, many, many colors, but not much of any one of the colors. So I thought it would be great experimentation. And I came up with some ideas for that and then returned home to knit both Mary Beth and myself our hand-knit wristbands for the event. This is a pre-Rhinebeck event, and Catherine Clark put out a colorwork chart that is quite charming. It's also a little bit challenging because there are long floats between the motifs, and it's interesting to practice catching your floats on very small circumference knitting, which I haven't done in a while, and my first attempt was pretty disastrous. The floats were too tight, and I ended up ripping it out and starting it over on some larger needles and longer double point needles. And then it started working out okay, and I'm really pleased with the two versions. One is very bright and colorful, and the other one is much more muted. Mary Beth has claimed the bright and colorful one, and so I just need to wash and block and kind of steam those up and make them look nice and bring them along with me for our Woolen Affair event. We have tickets for the very first time slot, so we will be early birds at the event. Following my visit with Tammy Gore and members of the Hudson Valley Textile Project, I continued north and spent some time visiting my sister and her farm in Vermont. It was picture perfect weather. We wore sweaters. It was chilly. We had a cookout outside. And Jessica has become quite a capital K knitter over the past year or so. So we spent some time knitting and talking through projects and pattern directions. I ate well. I slept well, and one of the lovely surprises was to hear some barred owls very close to where I was sleeping at night. It was a beautiful visit, a cherished visit, and it was difficult to say goodbye and start the trip back down south. But I did, and I used as one of my stopping points the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival in Greenwich, New York. I caught about the last hour of the festival, and I was able to visit two new-to-me yarn purveyors. They were both, thankfully, in the same barn and easy to find. One was Michael of Upland Fiber Company, who I've mentioned before. This was his first vending event, and he had a neat and beautiful booth set up and said he had done very well, interacted with a lot of people. He has really beautiful classic colors in both a fingering and a worsted weight. And the yarn is called Core. It's 50% Cormo, 50% Corriedale. It's really luxurious stuff. And I am considering this yarn for a sweater knit, a potential sweater knit for Samuel, who, though he is not allergic to wool, he is usually averse to the kind of wool I like to use for my sweaters, because his skin is more sensitive. And I think this is the kind of wool that would actually appeal to him in a garment or maybe an accessory that goes around his neck, because it is so soft and it still has the integrity of wool yarn, which is important to me as I knit with it. Michael has a trunk show coming up at Do You Knit in Basking Ridge, New Jersey on October 5th. So if you are in the area and this interests you, you might want to check into that event. I will certainly link it in the show notes. Right across the barn from Michael was Kyle of Viking Fiber Company. This is a Colorado-based yarn company using RWS, Responsible Wool Standard wool. There is a kind of Viking theme to the colorway names and the descriptions of the yarn, as well as some of the knitwear that is being designed with this yarn. So it's kind of a lot of fun to explore that. I selected two skeins of the Erin Weight yarn, and I was particularly looking into Erin Weight yarn for one last quick garment that I would like to knit before New York Sheep and Wool. I'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment, but suffice it to say, both of these gentlemen have a very clear concept, great design. Their booths are easy to shop, well organized, visually appealing. Their labeling is clear and sturdy and informative. It has like a lot of information about the yarn and the provenance right on the packaging. So they're like ship-shape, kind of doing everything up to the moment. They also have really great social media campaigns for what they're doing. And I predict that they will both go quite far, because clearly they have invested a lot of time and thought into the products that they're selling. So I said I chose Erin Weight yarn, and the colorways are Slipnir and Apples of Immortality. One is a deep plummy color and the other is a nice mustard golden color. Thank you. worked continuously on this project and did a lot of knitting as I traveled north, as I chatted with my sister, and I was able to bind off and complete the sweater and give it a little bit of a steam block just before I left Vermont and wear it to the festival where I could show this beautiful garment off to Michael. I used the core fingering weight in the pewter colorway, as well as leftover mohair lace yarn from a previous project in like a blush pink and a shimmery gold. This eyelet sweater, I did the eyelet drop shoulder sweater. It came out beautifully. This is a wonderful, quick knit, very versatile, and I'm eager to bring it to Rhinebeck with me because, as we know, the weather could be just about anything. And I think having options is important. This could also be a nice layering piece. So I made mine in a cropped length. I did make a few modifications. One was to have a split hem. So I started each hem separately in one by one rib. The back hem is slightly longer than the front hem. Did quite a bit of that ribbing and then went into the eyelet pattern. And then I alternated between two different colors of lace weight for the garter stitch rounds instead of just using one color throughout. I trimmed down the amount of positive ease just a little bit. And another thing that I did was I had started one side of the sweater, of course, because I didn't cast on in the round, and then determined that it was a little bit narrow. So instead of unknitting it and starting again, I used that stitch count for the back, and then I cast on a larger stitch count for the front. And I have done this in the past. I have knit a lot of sweaters kind of following two different sets of directions so that the back is not as big as the front. This is especially useful in a pattern that doesn't have any bust darts or anything. But when it came to following Lila Raven's directions for seaming up the shoulders, because I had some different stitch counts and because, you know, my knitting looked a little bit different at the top from the back and the front, I didn't get quite the tidy seaming that she probably imagined. I also decided to do a crochet bind off or crochet seaming for the shoulder seams. I think it looks okay. I think the emphasis is really on the horizontal stripes on the sweater, not really so much on the shoulder seaming. Conversely, picking up around the armholes for the one by one rib sleeves was much easier than I imagined. I got the correct stitch count that I wanted on each sleeve both times I picked up, and it went super quick. And there's no real additional stitches or picking up for any kind of a neckline. You're using your cast off as your neckline, and this doesn't roll and it looks quite tidy. So overall, I am happy with it. I think, you know, my modifications made it a little more difficult for me. That's pretty much my usual. I love this sweater. I think it works for, you know, lots of body types, yarn types, and situations. And it's a great way to use up some leftover bits of silk mohair that you may have, because you really don't need that many grams at all to do those garter stitch rows. Also, one of my garter stitch rows of mohair lace is not garter. It's stockinette. I noticed it after the fact and I didn't go back to fix it. I can live with it. Once again, that is the eyelet drop shoulder sweater designed by Lila Raven, knit in Upland Fiber Co.'s core yarn, fingering in the pewter colorway. All right, before I talk about my final Rhinebeck cast on, I just want to follow up with my 6 seasons A New Way with Vegetables cooking adventure that I've been having. So much fun with this cookbook. In the last episode, I mentioned that as I was recording, I was making the tomato conserva. And as a matter of fact, as I'm recording today, I am making my 2nd batch of tomato conserva because I was so impressed with the product I got. And I didn't think that the approximately 2 cups of tomato paste I ended up with was going to be enough for the winter, because I can see a lot of applications for this kind of a product. So I went back to the farmer's market, picked up a larger supply of tomatoes this time, and these tomatoes were much smaller than the last time and I think had more concentrated flavor. They were so small that blanching and peeling them seemed like way overkill. So I put the tomatoes on sheet pans and just baked them at 400 until their skin started blistering and splitting. And then I put them through this squeezo type press to expel the skins and seeds and then capture the juice and the pulp. That is now cooking down in my oven. And this time I worked on a suggestion. I'm not sure where this suggestion came from, but somewhere along the line, someone mentioned that, instead of composting the skins, you could dehydrate them and make tomato powder. So I looked that up, and actually it's kind of a cool and useful product. And I think if I made a big bunch of it, it would be a nice holiday gift with maybe like a little instruction card saying all the things you could do with it. So I have begun to dehydrate in my oven all of the skins and the seeds from those tomatoes. And once it is properly dry, I will be whizzing it up in a food processor to create a powder. And the uses for this include adding to soups and stews, sprinkling over dishes like eggs, rice, pizza, sprinkling it over a soft cheese on a cheese plate, just really all kinds of opportunities to use something like this. And even though I do compost those things instead of throwing them out in the trash, I think making the most of a farmer's market purchase is important. So I'm excited to see how that turns out. Also from the 6 Seasons cookbook, I have made for the first time the flatbread recipe that's in there. I think I could be a lot more brave in terms of turning up the heat. I also think that making the dough and then immediately making the flatbreads is essential. I held my dough a little bit because we had a guest coming, and because I was eager, I wanted to have the dough kind of prepared. But really, I think the smart thing to do is make the dough and then immediately throw it into the cast iron skillet. They came out good, but I think that more experience with the recipe will yield a better result. So I will keep on trying with that cookbook, and it's just been very inspirational, kind of aspirational. It's nice to keep turning to the same cookbook. Oh. Jumper by Ranti Ehinmola. This is a super quick knit. It's a cropped sweater, kind of oversized, and it combines an Erin weight yarn and either single or doubly held mohair lace yarn in very wide stripes on a very big needle. It creates kind of like a statement piece, a layering piece. I think it would look fantastic over an Amy jumpsuit, which I love anything that would look good over an Amy jumpsuit because that's kind of like a classic thing that I turn to. And I think it would also just be a really versatile piece to have depending on the weather in upstate New York in mid-October, just to provide some more choices. So far, I haven't even wound the yarn for this project, but I intend to do that and see if I can knit up this sweater real quick in the days leading up to the festival. The pattern comes in 9 sizes, I believe, and there are quite a few examples of this pattern knit up from very different perspectives and different color stories from different knitters. I really like to see that when I'm considering knitting a pattern. I'm the kind of person who really scours Ravelry entries to see what people are doing, what they say about the knitting, if it looks like there is any consistency with like a weird way that something is falling or bunching, you know, that will give me pause. And so what I've been able to see with this orbital jumper is that it's fun, it's quick, and people really kind of put their own personal stamp on it in terms of color choices and how they style it. I believe I will be holding my lace weight silk mohair yarn double for this, because that's an awfully big needle size to have a single strand. It kind of makes me feel nervous. So I think I'll double up there. I don't have enough of a single color to double up, but I have a beautiful walnut dyed Bert and Ernie from Carol Foster. And then I have some leftover kind of like a taupe color. And I'm hoping that those two held together will give that nice neutral sheer effect. Once again, this is the orbital jumper designed by Ranti Ehinmola, and I plan to be knitting it in Foster Sheep Farm yarn. About use of potato fibers in the textile industry. In the past few weeks, I've read several articles on this topic. Most of them have been behind paywalls. So the one I'm going to share is a bit dated. It's from 2023, but it concerns a topic that is quite prominent in recent news. And that involves using the tops of potatoes, which are not edible and also difficult to dispose of, and extracting fibers that are similar to bast fibers of hemp and linen in order to make use of them in the textile industry. I think this is fascinating, and I was eager to share more on this topic with you. The site I'm reading from is called Springwise: Innovation That Matters. And this is an article titled "Textile Fibers Made Out of Potato Waste," written by Matthew Hempstead. One startup's chemical-free process is extracting cellulosic fibers from the waste generated by the annual potato harvest. The fashion industry causes 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions and generates 20% of the world's wastewater, heaping pressure on fashion brands to reduce the impact of their operations. Many have set ambitious targets, but a key sticking point is the lack of affordable alternative materials that can truly reach scale. Now, UK startup Fibe, F-I-B-E, has developed Patacel, and that's spelled P-A-T-A-C-E-L, Patacel, a fiber made from potato waste, which it believes is well-positioned to meet this challenge. According to the company, 150 million tons of potato waste is currently pulverized or incinerated each year due to being inedible and unsafe to compost. This stream of discarded material could be a key to solving fashion's material problem, with the potential to meet 70% of global non-synthetic clothing demand. Fibe has developed a process that uses several biological and mechanical steps to extract fibers from waste potatoes without using harsh chemicals. These fibers behave like conventional fibers and are compatible with existing textile weaving machinery. Patacel requires 99.7% less water and emits 82.4% fewer pollutants than cotton and does not require additional land for raw material cultivation. The chemical-free process also significantly outperforms the footprint of many of the industry's upcoming eco-textiles, such as hemp. Patacel exhibits many of the desirable characteristics of eco-bast fibers, those such as hemp, flax, and jute that are derived from woody fiber obtained from the stems of plants, such as strength, durability, and dyeability. But crucially, the Patacel fibers have a very small diameter, which means they will be very soft, unlike hemp and jute. They are also antimicrobial thanks to the presence of the natural compound solanine. Fibe is currently at the pre-revenue stage of development, but has been successful at obtaining government funding with three UK Research and Innovation, or UKRI, applications raising more than £500,000. Fibe Chief Information Officer Bianca Hazelgonda told Springwise, "To enter the market, we will need to raise a further $900,000 to expand the team, purchase production equipment, and fund additional resource and development." Other alternative fiber innovations spotted by Springwise include fibers made through fermentation, fibers made from captured CO2, and fibers made from agricultural waste that contain naturally colored proteins. And this is an article that was posted on the 23rd of October in 2023. Hey, thanks so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week and that you find time for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.